You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Learn more at wearelibertarians.com.
The Johnny Rocket Launchpad is liberty. Each week, we strive to bring you the best guests in talk radio. The Johnny Rocket Launchpad delivers weekly interviews of noteworthy politicians, experts, and activists. The Johnny Rocket Launchpad is bringing the party to the Libertarian Party and launching ideas in your direction. Check us out at johnnyrocketlaunchpad.com. You can hear me, Kurt Nelson, and the beautiful Heather Nixon talk about the ideas of liberty. Rock and roll.
Hey there, Liberty lovers. This is Mark Clare of the Lions of Liberty podcast, where we strive to bring you great conversations about the ideas of liberty 3 days a week, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Check us out at lionsofliberty.com.
Hey guys, this is Roger Paxton, and if you're fed up with the government running every single aspect of your life, but you're not listening to the Lava Flow podcast yet, then what's wrong with you? Check us out at thelavaflow.com, or just go back to sucking up to the government. The Lava Flow Podcast, striking the root every single episode.
I want to tell you about our sponsor. We are taking sponsors now, and I just want to say thank you to everybody. 812 Farms couldn't be happier about being a sponsor of this program. You guys have gone above and beyond. Like I said in the last episode, I couldn't imagine anybody would actually go and talk to a hop farm in Columbus, Indiana. But you guys have bought home hops. Home brewers have been buying hops like crazy from 812 Farms in Columbus, Indiana, and liking their Facebook page.
Hopefully ordering permafrost at the tap down on Mass Ave.
Yep. So thank you guys so much for supporting our advertiser. They supply home brewers and commercial breweries with locally grown hops, and they're in the process of starting a destination brewery down there in Bartholomew County. They're using all Indiana-grown ingredients, and they want to build a brew pub that honors the farmers of Indiana. And they're going to build a wedding barn, an event center, a restaurant, a brewery, an indoor hydroponics vegetable garden, and overnight lodging over the course of the next few years. So they're doing big things down there in Columbus, Indiana, and right now they're doing hop sales and beer infusion events with bars. So if you own a bar, then please hit them up. If you're a patron to a bar here in Central Indiana, please get with your favorite bar and get with 812 Farms. You guys are the best. Thank you so much for supporting them, and we thank you for everything that you guys do to support us.
We are supported by listeners like you. Donate per month or make a one-time donation through PayPal or Patreon at wearelibertarians.com.
Welcome to We Are Libertarians. I'm your host, Chris Spangle. We Are Libertarians brings all of the irreverence modern politics deserves. We explain to you what the hell is happening in our world today and how we can fix it by thinking differently. This is a podcast brought to you by the We Are Libertarians Network, so please be sure to rate and review us in iTunes, like us on Facebook, share this episode with friends, and support us through PayPal or Patreon at wearelibertarians.com. We are supported by listeners like you, so $1 per episode by pledging $5 a month helps us grow. We are always taking your questions or comments at editor@wearelibertarians.com. Generally, this is where I say that you fast forward 20 minutes and you'll get to all the meat of the show. And that's not going to be the case today because we've got a very special guest, my mentor, my former boss, Abdul, my former groomsman for the wedding that I had, for, you know, that marriage that was around for a while. Is Abdul Hakim Shabazz.
In other words, things that you and I are associated with never tend to last very long.
That's right. And Greg Lenz is here as well.
How are you, buddy?
I'm doing pretty well. Now, Abdul, who would have ever thought that you would still be married after all these years and I would be the divorced one?
Me? No offense.
Yeah. You're much more mature than I am.
Bull that too.
Yeah, yeah. You're older, you're wiser.
And darker.
And darker, yes. Plus,
my wife and I, we made an agreement a long time ago. When we decided to get married, it was like, okay, two things. Divorce is not an option. You know, you made the promise, God, family, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So divorce is off the table. However, murder is always, you know.
100%.
Exactly.
Always, you know, a good murder threat really keeps things moving.
I tell my wife, you'll be a widow before you're a divorcee.
Yep.
Well, that's true love.
Yep. Nothing keeps a marriage spicy like death threats.
Yep. Nope. I mean, you know.
We're still together.
Now, Abdul is the proprietor of indiepolitics.org. excuse me. And so Indian politics, you know, Abdul was the host of the show that I produced in 2007. I was the morning show producer on the lowest rated AM station in Indianapolis, the 50th market. Abdul was the host of said show called Abdul in the Morning. Even if you go to iTunes, you look up WXNT's Ghost, you can find some previous episodes of your show and us goofing around, the glory days, as I like to call it. And so you were on the air there, and now you're on the air at WIBC, a local news talk station. But I'm very proud of you. You once you left WXNT, you started IndiePolitics.org, or I think it was a little before that you had started it, right?
Well, I've been thinking about it for a while.
Right.
Because I'd been at WXNT from 2004 to 2011, and to be at any radio station for nearly 7 years...
is unheard of.
Is almost unheard of. Yeah. Matter of fact, after the Bob and Tom Show and Dave Smiley... I want to say it was like the third longest serving
100%.
Yeah, radio host, you know, morning drive consistently, you know, at the time, you know. And this is only supposed to be a 2-year deal.
Governor Mitch Daniels once said that his dog knew two voices in the morning.
Yep.
His and Abdul's.
Honestly, that's the kind of consumer you want listening.
Right.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
And that was always our target audience. We knew we were never going to be the ratings giant powerhouse that WIBC was at the time. So it's like, why bother? No, that's not our bailiwick. Our bailiwick is we reach the influence makers, the newsmakers, so let's talk to them, and then the lobbyists will follow, and then if you sell it right, the revenue will follow.
Yeah, absolutely. You're getting alpha consumers, which, you know, everyone wants, because one of them's worth 50, you know, mindless listeners on morning talk or morning drive.
And unfortunately, we had salespeople who didn't quite understand that concept.
They never understand much of anything.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, let's just go to the local jewelry store.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's talk to Jared.
Both of them.
Yeah. I would love to advertise on your show. My name is Tom Shane.
Oh, God.
And so you started Indie Politics, and it has become a lucrative digital media platform for you.
Yes, very lucrative. Actually, it's won a couple of awards. Washington Post.
Congratulations.
Yeah. And also from the Society of Professional Journalists here in Indiana.
Very cool.
They called you a professional, huh?
Yes, they did.
not a lot of your other fellow media members. They're all just like, oh, Abdul.
Yeah.
That's Abdul.
And there's nothing nicer than to get the big, giant... blank you award.
Right. Yeah. Abdul does things differently than your traditional media, and it's one of the reasons that we respect the hell out of him and encourage you to go check out IndiePolitics.org, because Abdul has come into Indianapolis. I mean, it was 2004 when you moved here, and you were just a babe, just a young boy, wandering through the city of Indianapolis looking for a politician to suck up to. And you've become great friends with most of the political establishment, some of the left, not as much. But even they are coming around to your charms, are they not?
Oh, yeah. I mean, my thing is, I approach politics a little bit differently than my colleagues here, because where I come from, you know, it's a profession.
Right.
And
that would be Chicago, Illinois.
Yeah, and it is.
Rather because, than a cartel.
Right. Yeah. You know, cartel, mafia, government, right. it's all taking your money.
Tomato.
Yeah, you know, you say you've been laid and I say you've been lied.
Right.
You know, blew the whole place up.
Right.
I know, but I came from a political culture where it is not uncommon for reporters to have good personal relationships with the people that they cover.
Right.
The trick is, everybody knows, though, where the line is, and no one ever asks anybody to cross the line to either report something they're not supposed to report or to give me something they're not supposed to give. As long as there's that understanding, the system works just fine.
Because telephone, telegraph, tell Abdul, you're in trouble.
Right. When people cross the line, that's when we start having issues and problems.
Right.
It's sort of an unspoken rule that you followed, or sort of tradition.
It's like the mafia family.
Omerta.
Some things we just don't. Everybody knows what the rule is, so there's no need to talk about it.
Abdul was one of the most disheartening statements ever said to me, but now I'm sort of for it, as we'll talk about. The progression of a young Chris Spangle. I was just, you know, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, and really ready to change the world and get involved in politics. And I, you know, we were on a news talk station. I'd grown up on Rush, so like one day I was going hard on the show after someone who was a local Democrat, and we go into break, and he turns on the intercom, and he goes, "Listen, you understand we have to work with these people, right?" And I was like, "Oh, this is all rigged, okay."
No, it's not necessarily rigged. It's relationships.
Right.
I mean, at the end of the day, politics, media, all the stuff functions via relationships.
Right.
And it's one thing to be the national media, swoop in like the plague of locusts that you are, devastate the local community, and then swoop off,
seagulls,
yeah, to the next planet, you know, like the friggin' Borg, you know, in Star Trek. But if you're going to be here for a while, what's the point? Can I say asshole?
Absolutely. You can say fuck. Yeah. You can say whatever you want.
All right. What's the point? What's the money in being an asshole?
Right.
When you got to talk to these people the next day.
Yeah.
And you also got their family listening, kids listening. Why would you drag some unnecessarily?
Right.
Right. So, if it's not, you know, critical to the point you're making or the narrative you're trying to build or present, then why dig in the mud?
Right. What do you get from it at the end of the day?
Yeah. So Abdul, and if you go back and listen in our feed, Abdul's been on two or three other times, around episode 3 or 4, and then a couple of years ago, a year or two ago, In Defense of the Establishment, I think is the title of the episode.
Yeah, it was that in the Greece crisis, the Grexit.
Yes. So, you know, Abdul is somebody who has been very instructional in how politics works for not only me, but for any of his listeners or readers. And he's right. It's all relationships. And so that's part of where libertarians go wrong, is they come out of it without... They weren't successful in the other two parties that they have just left because they didn't know how to build relationships. And so then they get into the Libertarian Party and they just start screaming at those people.
Yeah, there's a lot of absolutism.
Right.
And, you know, I've never been a big fan of dogma.
Right.
It's like, no, because as my mother, a lovely mother, would always say, nobody has a monopoly on good ideas or stupidity.
Right. We try. I mean, we're making our best effort, Greg.
Yeah, we'll never stop such a, you know, important cause, but...
Now, you, as we mentioned, are a podcaster of color.
I'm a colored podcaster?
Okay, no, let's not go there, but...
Why, sure, Mr. Spangle. Yeah, how would you like me? Would you like this in an MP3 format today or MP4?
I go back and listen to... If I ever run for office, someone will go pull the tapes of me at WXNT doing the Kingfish voice along with Abdul, and my career will be over.
I don't know. I mean, have you ever called a bird, a Mexican drone that was flying overhead during a stump speech? I feel like... any shame involved from past sound bites is no longer applicable to the political process.
That's true. Yeah, yeah. So Abdul, as a podcaster of color and a conservative, you're on the conservative spectrum.
Moderate conservative.
You and Greg are pretty close. You're not libertarian. Greg's more libertarian than you are, but you're not libertarian. But you're not conservative. You're definitely not liberal.
More that northeastern kind of conservative
country club.
That kind of leave people in their private parts alone.
Right. Economically focused.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Let's put people to work and leave all that other crap somewhere else.
Yeah. Do your social planning elsewhere. That's not the place for government.
Right. Now, you recently, there was a controversy, Abdul, that we've got to discuss because you told white people that it was okay to say the N-word. Did you not?
No.
Yes, I did.
Yes, he did. He absolutely did.
Now, let's put all that in context, shall we?
Now, he ruffled some feathers.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We got quite a few people. Work. The natives were restless that day.
Let's not say natives.
I am stunned that you're alive.
Black Lives Matter was not happy with
I was
him.
A black life that didn't matter that day.
Right. Now,
all other black lives matter except for mine.
You're no longer allowed to self-identify as black.
Unfortunately, the government and my ID has taken care of all that for me.
Now, he calls me one day and he goes, now listen, you're an internet troll. Can you explain these Black Lives Matter people to me? How do you deal with these trolls? And I was like, you punch them right back in the face, Abdul. And so what happened?
Okay. What happened was... Early on in the Trump administration, Donald Trump had met with some African Americans. You know, the
Representative classic, Elijah Clemmings of Georgia.
Yeah, the classic, we're reaching out, et cetera, look at all these people. And so the deputy mayor of Annapolis, deputy mayor for neighborhoods, gentleman by the name of David Hampton, had... someone had wrote something on Facebook, and the deputy mayor responded, saying he called it a coon convention.
Now, we're going to go out on a limb and say that he's probably a deputy mayor of color.
Yes, he is. Okay. He's African-American. Right. He's a colored deputy mayor. Right. You are correct.
Okay.
And so, and I saw that, and then people were agreeing with him. Like, you know, I'm like, you got to be kidding me. I was like, first of all, the guy is the president, regardless of what you think about Donald Trump, the guy's president of the United States.
Right.
And so, guess what? You're going to have to deal with him. He's there. You may as well meet, you know, try to get your agenda in front of him, maybe give him a thought or two that he didn't have before, make him more sympathetic to your cause.
Absolutely.
Blah, 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 blah.
Align interests.
Yeah, it's good politics. Good business is good politics. So there was that part of the equation. But then, like I said, when I saw the coon part, I was like, okay, you've got to be frigging kidding me. And just all the people were like, yeah, they don't represent black people, and, you know, House Negroes and all this other crap and blah, blah, blah.
Whoa, this all developed on Facebook?
Yeah, this is all part of the
And this language was allowed?
All part of the Facebook extensive conversation. And so what I said was like, all right, if it's okay for, you know, black people to, you know, if a white person had said this, if it was a white deputy mayor who had said, look at this coon convention, he'd have been gone, you know, and out the door faster than Bob Beckel.
Right.
Yeah, he'd have been out. So I'm like, okay, well, why should the black deputy mayor get a pass on using this type of language to describe other African Americans?
Mm-hmm.
Now, what you say at home, behind closed doors, everybody has done something.
Why'd you look at Greg when you said that?
Well, I didn't have a sheet on his head. So,
it's a Greg
letter. I can see the color of his eyes.
He's got a Braves hat on, which is very offensive. I'm triggered.
Well, as a Cherokee person, I'm allowed to.
Oh, okay.
I'm quarter Cherokee. Yeah.
There you go.
That
You're
means
on
only,
my land.
That means I only get one third of the casino.
That's right.
So I'm like, all right, if it's okay for the deputy mayor to get away with this, then what happens when a Caucasian person says this?
Right.
The deputy mayor, you just gave basically them permission. So I'm like, hey, dear white people, you now have my permission to use the N-word.
Oh, my God.
Because apparently if it's okay for the deputy mayor to use this type of language, then where's the moral authority to say you should not use this type of language?
Now, Abdul's a hand talker, so I apologize that there was a little bit of bumping.
It's necessary. It's the emphatic nature of what he did.
Well,
because it is... is as incendiary as arguably anything you'd experience online nowadays.
He's seen a lot of black preaching. He's very expressive.
Yeah.
So,
I can't, you said this.
Yeah.
In the newspaper, in writing.
In writing.
Yeah.
So, oh, my. You have a death sentence.
So how'd that go for you?
Well, let's see here. I've got it pulled up. Several hundred comments later.
I would imagine so.
We just heard a strike of thunder and Abdul ran over
God
to take a bow.
That's right. Pleased with your internet.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, the Facebook went crazy. Social media went nuts. A bunch of people came out of the woodworks calling for me to be fired and
boycott
my employer. Like, I don't know how you're going to boycott the law firm of Lewis and Wilkins, where I'm of counsel, but okay.
Right.
Good luck with that one. And all the places where I, you know, the people I feed and work and stuff I do, everybody's like,
That's Abdul.
It's Abdul. We see what you're doing. Yeah, but you're using sarcasm like any good writer does to make a point. You're showing out the absurdity of what the deputy mayor did.
Right.
Like, no sane, serious person thought I was like running around saying, okay, white people, you know, start dropping the N-word
for sure.
Left and right. Because one of the last things I said at the very end was, where's this right here? So if you have racist feelings and want to start dropping tons of slurs and epithets, knock yourself out. Now, I do have to warn you, a lot of people may not be as tolerant as Mayor Hogshead and local black Democrats, so right if you knock yourself out, they might do the same to you.
Right.
Oh.
Right.
So this is you, you know, ingratiating yourself to those who hate you.
Yeah, I was like, good luck, white people, and Godspeed, and by the way, happy Black History Month, because I wrote it during February.
Yeah.
Wow.
See, now you see where I got it from.
I do. I see it. I like it. It's just, man, what a comment like that does a lot of the time is you've just booked your entire next week of what you're going to be focusing on.
Right.
You are going to have to talk to so many people you may or may not want to have a conversation with. And so.
And see, and I didn't run from it. I was like, yeah, I said it. I wrote it.
Right.
I was not hacked.
Yeah, like, no, like, why try to deny, well, I didn't write that, or you took me out of context. No, this is exactly what I wrote, and this is exactly what I meant. See, look, see the cheering white people icon thing right there?
Yeah. Stock photos.
Stock photo of the white people, you know, with the yay fist bump.
And stock white people are the whitest people.
Oh, they are.
Go check out Middle Class Fancy on Instagram. It's the best.
It absolutely is.
It's like looking at a Glenda Ritz poster.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, wow.
So, now, what was the response from the Black Lives Matter community to you?
The Black Lives Matter community, which we and I have never been big fans of, they went after me, you know, the classic, you ought to be fired, you ought to be let go. Now, please note, they said they were going to protest at the radio station, but they, I guess they must have thought I had a morning show, and that was maybe a little bit too early for some folks to get up and show up and protest.
That's sort of indicative of our generation.
The opinions expressed by Abdul Hakim Shabazz are not those of Greg Lenz or Chris Spangle on the We Are Libertarians Network.
No, the protest was at 10, so people showed up at like 2 in the afternoon.
Right.
That's like the Yale hunger strike where you could actually tag out because you were hungry. And so someone, you could go eat and then you tagged back in and then they had fillers for each other. And I thought, our generation has ruined everything.
Actually, I just had to outsource my hunger strike.
Exactly.
Right. People to go on a hunger strike for me.
Nothing says, you know, protest and boycott like having stand-ins.
So your generation have stand-ins. My generation, we just outsource it to somebody else.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
That's the difference between millennials and Gen X. You know, we'd hire somebody to go protest for us.
Yeah, $15 an hour to hold this sign.
Six.
Sorry about Chris Cornell. I know that was a loss to all of you Gen Xers.
Hey, don't worry. Your Taylor Swift day's coming too, so.
Now, so you weathered the storm.
Yeah, we weathered the storm just fine.
Right.
I mean, I was amazed that the people got all worked up, and where the only time where it got a little out of control where somebody kind of made some comments about my wife. And I was like, well, but just to let you know, my wife was in the military, and she got ribbons for sharpshooting. So if you want to come by...
Mrs. Shabazz does not play.
So if you want to come by and interrupt her, I recommend you don't do it during Dr. Phil.
Yeah.
It's going to get real, and it's going to get deep.
Yeah.
And by the way, this column ran in the Recorder.
The black newspaper here in town.
And I remember, because I remember calling my editor, I was like, hey, Ebony, just so you know, this is what I'm getting ready. I gave him the heads up. Here's what I'm going to be sending over, so there's no shock.
Right.
No surprise. And they're like, hey... He said it. It's part of a conversation.
She hung up the phone. This damn Negro lost his mind.
She said that the first day we met. She's like a little sister.
Yeah.
God bless capitalism and the need for reads and page views.
So Abdul is a part of the establishment, a proud member of the establishment. And, you know, I started off so... A thread of this podcast, coming to a podcast near you... is my disillusionment with the Tea Party mentality, the outsider mentality. And you know what? Maybe we should start paying politicians. He used to argue for a full-time legislature. And I was like, have you lost your mind? What do we need full-time politicians for? Now I'm just like, you know what? All these normal people getting involved in politics are ruining it.
Well, I mean, do you hire an amateur plumber?
Right.
You know, do you hire amateurs to fix your equipment?
Sure.
No, you hire a professional.
Honestly, the first month of the Trump administration, with the authoring of executive orders, with just in total complete lack of institutional knowledge on how government works and the entire apparatus, you know, bureaucracy, was a pretty good example of why, as an outsider, you can stumble out of the gate in a heartbeat, because everyone is so used to people being professionals and knowing the norms in order.
Yeah.
And so when you don't, when you are that, you know, outsider and that amateur, it hamstrings you. You're hamstrung out of the gate.
And so here's the thing. Everybody who is not from Washington, D.C., who comes in and says, I'm an outsider, we're going to change and turn around the Washington culture. I'm going to say Jimmy Carter tried to do it.
He absolutely did. And he tried to bring his own people.
System bit back. You know,
yeah.
And actually, for all the talk that Ronald Reagan was an outsider, Ronald Reagan was a major insider.
No. So I'm watching the Get Me Roger Stone documentary on Netflix, which I highly recommend to everybody. Roger Stone, you know, it documents a little bit of his time in the Libertarian Party in 2012. And, you know, he's somebody that is very instructive if you want to understand Donald Trump, and somebody that I've met a couple times and is a very, very interesting man. And a very intelligent man. You know, here's a guy who at 19, was on Creep with Nixon and Watergate. And so when he ran for the young Republican chair in 77 at 25 and got elected, they were trying to smear him as the brains behind Watergate. And this is 1977, okay? Not 2007. He goes, yeah, that was me. I did it. I own it. You know,
deal with it.
At one point, he's like, you know, people who say that I shouldn't like Richard Nixon, fuck him. I don't care. You know, I mean, he's.
I have his tattoo. I have a tattoo of his face on all of my back.
So, really, an instructive documentary, and it talks. You know, Carter was one of these people who brought in outsiders, because at that point, you know, the Republican establishment, the Republicans had the presidency with Nixon, who was the ultimate insider, who had been there under Eisenhower in the 50s and had a lot of infrastructure built. And all those people didn't just disappear. People like Roger Stone folded into Stone Manafort, or Black Manafort and Stone and Kelly, and created this massive... They invented lobbying. in a massive way.
Yeah, they turned it up to a multi-million dollar, you know, profession.
They weaponized it and really created
internationally too. That's where they made the majority of their money.
Absolutely. And so it's really instructive about the business of the establishment and you know, and then also how an establishment member like Stone can get into one sex scandal in 96 and then get kicked out of the establishment and then come back to bite them right in the ass with Trump. So it's a really interesting documentary that I would highly recommend. And it talks about, you look at Reagan, you look at the Republicans, and Reagan was not an outsider whatsoever.
Nope.
But Donald Trump is. He's much more like Carter than Reagan or even Clinton, or in that his people don't have experience. Jared Kushner is very young with no experience in his 30s. Stephen Miller is young and in his 30s. You know, also LOL at Stephen Miller writing the Saudi Arabia speech about Islam. That's going to be great. No, I haven't yet.
I haven't had a chance. He's giving it currently, I believe. I think at this time, and I'm half expecting him to say, nobody has been better to the brown people than I have.
Because Stephen Miller led an anti-Muslim week at Duke University along with his buddy Richard Spencer.
Yeah, that's the connection people always forget is they co-chaired the Duke Conservative Union.
Yeah. So
somebody needs to tell Donald Trump there's no such thing as Sharia law.
So, Abdul, as the ultimate insider, the man who runs the political machine here in Indiana.
I don't run the political machine. I just make sure it's well agreed.
Right. You have to look at Donald Trump and his performance as president so far and just shake your head.
I don't necessarily shake my head. I tend to just drop it in my hand and just look at the table and do that Jean-Luc Picard internet meme facepalm. That's how I look at the Trump administration. It's like,
I mean, how much trouble do you think he's in at this point?
I don't think Donald Trump is necessarily in any trouble per se. I do think the impeachment conversation is way overblown, way, you know, premature, and it's a bit much.
Absolutely. Matt Welch nailed it on their great podcast, The Fifth Column, where he said people are trying to jump to the conclusion of this. They're jumping ahead to the conclusion instead of talking about the facts on the ground and the realities of now.
Yeah.
Well, there aren't any.
Yeah.
Everything's exactly. Innuendo and allegation and anonymous sources. You know, you don't have, I mean, unless you treat Director Comey's secondhand reading to a New York Times reporter of a memo, which we may or may not know exists, then everything is based on innuendo and allegation thus far.
Right. And like I said, it's one thing to, you know, look for patterns, you know, look for information, try to piece things together, because that, you know, that's what I do all the time. But to automatically say, all right, somebody's going to jail, somebody's being impeached, like, okay, that's a bit much. But the problem with the Trump people is I do not think Donald Trump has what we call a WTF person.
Sure.
And every elected official, always said, every politician needs a WTF guy. That is a guy who can walk in when the official is doing something stupid and say, dude, what the fuck? No, we are not doing that. Right. Well, yes, I am. You're fired. No, I'm not. Now sit down and shut up. Every politician, Bill Clinton had it in James Carville. George W. Bush had it with Karen Hughes. Barack Obama had it with David Axelrod. Mm-hmm. You know, you need that person who can basically come in and tell you, no, you're being stupid.
Yeah.
You need to stop, and you need to stop now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they need that counterbalance.
Right. And Donald Trump doesn't have it. Because you've got to remember, part of Donald Trump's problem is, coming from the private sector, you know, you got smart people, but fundamentally, they're all going to do what you tell them to do because you're the CEO, and they will all want to curry favor. You know, government doesn't work that way.
Right.
You know, because it was never designed to work that way.
Yeah, it was designed for counterbalances.
Right.
You know, and to operate within a framework that he... Honestly, being an amateur, you don't know what the boundaries of the framework are. You know, you can't comprehend. There are so many laws and there are so many, you know, statutes and interpretations of legal rulings that any the things that he says off the cuff inside the Oval Office that end up getting leaked that are allegations, you could violate any 10 different existing mm-hmm. statutes, you know, and that seems to be what he continually runs
afoul. The good news is for a lot of statute violations, you got to actually know you're doing it.
Right.
No, you do, because right. otherwise
like Clinton's emails.
Yeah, otherwise there's so many rules that everybody would go to jail because
all
everybody's violated because it's just so voluminous. But the problem with the Donald Trump people is simply, hey, we're going to go in, we're going to drain the swamp, we're going to clean house, and yada, yada, yada. Like, no, it's not going to happen. The establishment always strikes back.
Yeah, and just the ultimate establishment is the deep state. It is the CIA, the intelligence community. And so, of course, they're going to leak.
Okay, how do I believe this deep state crap?
Of course you don't.
You know, some days a cigar really is just a cigar.
You don't believe that the CIA and the NSA, who have dark budgets, who operate in secret, essentially, you don't think that when Donald Trump says, you know, fuck the intelligence community, they don't start striking back and start leaking. I mean,
who leaks his phone calls?
It is so clear at this point that there is.
But here's the thing,
that the intelligence community is trying to sabotage him.
Blaming the leak for your political problems is like blaming the smoke detector for the fire.
See, I got to disagree because you.
And you would be wrong.
Right. But.
See, you disagree with me. So there we go.
I can follow you around at any point and take something out of context and make you look bad, especially when there is a press that is willing to be fed and those people have been.
But you cannot make me look bad if I don't give you material every day to make me look bad.
I'm not arguing that.
When your people go out and make a public statement, yes, 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 and then you on Twitter say no.
No, right.
You don't need deep state.
You do, though. Like, so the conversation, like the New York Times article, is based on Director Comey sitting in Trump's office in the Oval Office. Pence and who else were, someone else, I think Kushner, were asked to leave. And then he tells him that General Flynn is a good guy and he hopes he will, you know, ease up on the pressure that he's putting on him. So then Comey allegedly agrees that he's a good guy, but doesn't agree to ease up on the investigation. Then he goes back to his office, writes a memo, and we don't know that this memo exists. We just know that whoever he gave the memo to read it aloud to a New York Times reporter. He wouldn't go on the record, and the Times reporter put it into a news story. Now, this had to have come from somebody.
Yeah.
No one is willing to use a source, though.
Right.
So either they're reporting a rumor as fact, or Director Comey, after being fired, decided to turn it over to the press, which is the deep state at work.
Or actually, no, it's the I don't trust this person, and so I'm going to make sure that there's an alternate record of the conversation that went down.
But under what authority?
I'm the FBI director.
No, at the time he's fired.
Actually, no. Here's the deal. And you ever worked in government?
No.
Okay. If you work in government, or you ever worked in a corporate setting?
Yeah.
You remember the old phrase CYA?
Of course. You are always looking to CYA.
When there's going to be some dispute between, say, a conversation you and I have, I'm going to make sure everything is noted and detailed.
All
in the
time.
In the office memo. So,
I have a notebook already.
Yeah. So yeah, if myself. And when there's a dispute.
You can go to the facts.
We can go to the facts. And there we go.
Right.
Same thing with, if I'm Director Comey. Matter of fact, here's where I will give a little bit of credence to your whole deep state theory. If I'm the intelligence community or law enforcement or anybody, and there's going to be a new head of the organization coming in, my job is going to find out as much as I humanly can about the person who's going to be my boss.
Mm-hmm.
And who am I going to have to deal with?
Luckily, you had him under investigation during the campaign, so you should know a lot about him.
No, because they keep giving me, but I can't investigate if you don't give me something to work with. That's what these people keep forgetting. See, this is the joy of being black, because you know everybody's after you, so don't give them an excuse.
Right. But what I'm saying is that you can't argue that there isn't an organization that exists called the CIA, the FBI, all the NSA, the intelligence community, the 17 agencies. They're an organized group of people who were...
You are attributing a certain acumen in government that does not exist. And some days it's Occam's razor. Some days the simplest explanations are exactly what it is. And I do not believe for the conspiracy for all this to take place, all these people working together in sync and in harmony. How long did we do a radio show together?
Yeah.
Is government really that competent?
No. But I do think that there are competent elements, and I do think that Donald Trump has pissed off the intelligence agencies, and that I do think that they are working to discredit him as a result of that.
But they can't discredit Donald Trump unless Donald Trump gives them material to do the discrediting.
Secondly,
like you said, you could follow me around all day.
Absolutely.
Now, you've known me for like damn near 12, 13 years.
Yeah.
Would you ever find me making inconsistent statements?
No, your nose is pretty clean.
There you go.
Yeah.
Now, will I say stuff all the time? Yeah, because that's kind of what I do.
Sure.
But if I've got a team of people who are out advocating a position or saying, no, this didn't happen, then I come along and totally contradict you.
Mm-hmm.
The problem, Mr. President, is you.
Nobody's arguing that. But I do think that they're in defense of the intelligence agencies. I think there's a certain element of the deep state that is gravely concerned about Donald Trump and his ability to do the job. And when you have somebody who's a loose cannon, and then he goes and does loose cannon stuff like give away Israeli spy secrets to the Russians, who are
from our single best authority, you know, in the intelligence committee on the commercial bombing of airplanes. That's right. An Israeli spy operating within ISIS.
Of course.
And puts their life in danger.
And you have assets who...
And by the way, it's really not hard to get secrets out of Donald Trump. Just cater to his ego. Mr. President, come on.
It's exactly what I'm saying.
You can tell us, how did you do it? You know, we don't believe you, Mr. President.
So when you have...
Oh, yes, no, you're no bullshitting me. No, like, I got it right here. Look, here's the guy's name right here on sheet of paper.
Right.
Look, Moshe Dayan, that's him.
Right, and so apparently...
He goes by Abdul.
He's right now, he's in Southport.
Right now, he's at the 5th and Dromedary in downtown Damascus.
So
you know where the shawarma place used to be that we blew up yesterday? He's right there.
And then, so I think that these people are not only concerned for their lives, the lives of the information that it gave to the Russians, who are on the opposite side of us in the Syrian conflict, the opposite side of the Israelis in that conflict. You know, he gave them information that was very specific from the Mossad that could be tracked to a specific source.
And so they're
going, well, how many CIA lives is he going to put at risk?
I mean, people forget with Hillary, the WikiLeaks email scandal, one of the things that was revealed is we gave up in that she discussed a U.S. spy that was an Iranian doctor that was in Iran at the time, and that individual was sentenced to death for espionage. And so that's what ends up happening, and that's why there's such an importance of the need for secrecy in protecting these sources who reveal this information, because it can be so easily tracked to one or two individuals, and these organizations have no qualms about eliminating two individuals, no matter how important they are to their organization.
It's called shut your fucking mouth.
Yeah, right. And that's why there is such an important... It looks so suspicious that secrecy is so necessary for like these clandestine services, but it very much is a life or death outcome when you reveal such sources, and it's, you know, was proven under Hillary's revealing this. This is our top intelligence for when a commercial jet bombing is coming.
Sure. Absolutely.
And keep your laptops off.
Right.
I know, but like I said, you know, this whole deep state conspiracy, you know, some days the facts are what they are. The guy just can't keep his mouth shut.
I'm not putting it into Alex Jones territory by any stretch of the imagination, but I do think that there...
By the way, how's that child custody working out for you, Al?
Yeah, but I do think that there is a...
Is that Melissa Donahue over there?
Oh, Melissa.
Oh, boy.
Would you like us an autographed copy of Spanking City Hall by Greg and I? We'll autograph it for you.
Well, thank you. I had no idea that you were the sole organizer of the Taxpayers' Revolution of 2007.
Yeah, no kidding. Imagine Melissa Donahue taking credit for something she couldn't.
Well, you may
done.
Not know this, but she also got Mayor Ballard elected here in Indianapolis.
That's right.
I had no idea that was possible.
Speaking of Mayor Ballard, just an offside. This is really just for Abdul and nobody else. But if you go out to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, there is now something called the Ballard Wall. And so when Mayor Ballard last year was the first Grand Prix, the guy waving the flag, the green star flag, and he got hurt, they've now built a foot on top of the inside pit wall. And all the yellow shirts now call it the Mayor Ballard Ball. So he lives on in infamy. So I know that was interesting to nobody but Abdul and I, but I thought that was a fun tip. But I do think that there is a coordinated effort to discredit Donald Trump by the intelligence agencies. They're helping him do his own...
Trump's worst enemy is his best friend. It's Donald Trump.
Of course. At the end of the day, that's what it comes down
to. And the intelligence community and all these people can't do anything to you unless you give them, assuming all this is true, they still can't do anything unless you give them ammunition.
Right.
Well, they can, though, be the source, because FBI, when you, like this memo that allegedly exists is treated as the word of God handed down, you know, from the temple, you know, from the mount. So it is, if Comey authors this memo, it is going to be treated in an investigation as the word of God. Whether or not this was actually what happened.
Sure.
So they have the ability to actually take down anyone they want. And if you look at Richard Nixon, his paranoia was a result of constant leaks.
No, but if you're not obstructing justice, what are you worried about?
We don't know that he did. We just know the FBI director's recount of their conversation.
But once again, if you're not giving people ammunition, you have nothing to worry about.
But we don't know that he did.
But exactly. But once again, if you're not giving people ammunition, you got nothing to worry about. Like I said, I do not subscribe, gentlemen, to conspiracy theories, because I've seen government up close and personal for the good chunk of my adult life. And you're attributing a certain amount of intellectual acumen, and that does not exist. To have all these people working together, in sync, in harmony. These are the people who can't even fill their freaking potholes on I-65.
These are not the people who pull. That is not the case, because one of the most intelligent people from my high school works for the CIA. I mean, the people who work in the deep state are... Edward Snowden is a genius. And don't get me wrong. Again, we totally agree with you.
Elected officials in the bureaucracy are totally different.
Government is wholly incompetent. That is the foundational principle of this show, is that government is incompetent and can't wipe its own ass, and we shouldn't rely on it.
I don't think so, because the military is extremely competent, and so are police. The investigative elements of the federal government and state government are extremely competent. It is when elected officials are involved in leading commissions and, you know, carrying out the passage of laws. I tend to think that is when it is extremely incompetent. But the bureaucracy, when it is strictly limited to the enforcement and basically the executive wing, they tend to do an absolute job, regardless of whether it was well done or not.
So you, Abdul, are saying that you don't trust the intelligence community in the CIA, that the people that work in the CIA bumbling idiots.
No, what I'm saying is, for this type of conspiracy to take place, with all these people, all different factions, all working together in tandem, and in total complete silence, attributes a certain amount of acumen and organization that I do not believe exists.
But that's a mischaracterization of what I believe. What I believe is that...
No, but you said in order for deep state to work, you got to have all these agencies working together in sync. Otherwise, you don't have a deep state.
You have maybe
like a shallow pool kind of state that you can wade around in, but you're not on the deep. But you're not going into the deep end of the
pool. Shadow government.
Yeah, a shallow government. You know, not the shadow government.
I'm for as shallow of a government as possible. You know me. Let's move on to Mike Pence. Let's say Donald Trump gets impeached.
Which brilliant pick in making sure you don't get impeached. What now, do? You pick the guy who, actually, the exact same thing that happened to Abdul with the Black Lives Matter groups happened to Mike Pence with the electrocuting the homosexuals community. You know, all of a sudden it became he advocates for electroconversion therapy of gay people when he said no such thing.
Right.
But if that is who you pick as your VP, you're safe forever.
See if you agree with my assessment of Mike Pence. Now, Abdul knows Mike Pence better than Mike Pence knows Mike Pence, because Abdul is part of the deep state of the Indiana government and has interviewed and been around Governor Mike Pence a lot. You've followed him as a congressman, but then, you know, when there's a press conference at the State House, Abdul is there standing in front of Mike Pence with a microphone in his face.
And I also get the first question, too. Don't
first
that.
Question. It's so funny. Abdul asked the first question. Now the other press is so used to it that they just don't even move. They just sit there. And if I've seen it happen, especially in the early days. If you didn't ask the question, there was about a 3-minute silence because they were just like waiting on you.
Yep.
It's crazy.
Like, I got nothing. I'm good.
My assessment of Mike Pence is that he's a moderately intelligent man, but not certainly not at Mitch Daniels' level of intelligence. He is a genuine article. He says exactly what he believes. He is a man of... So when he says he believes in Jesus Christ and he's faithful to his wife, he's 100% that way. I have respect for his character, but not. I personally don't have respect for a lot of what he believes and the policy positions that he has. But he's a genuine man. His character. It's why the Pence pick. Why Pence would go work for Donald Trump made no sense to me, because they're the opposite.
Actually, the Pence pick for Pence going to work for Donald Trump, if you know Mike, makes absolute perfect sense.
Okay, explain that, please.
Look at it like this. Let's say there's a job that's offered to you. You're not crazy about the people you're going to be working for, but you're really excited about the opportunity and the changes you can make.
Sure.
And that outweighs the jerk boss.
Right.
Same thing with Mike. It's totally, like, all right.
Totally understand.
Like, all right, it's Donald Trump, but I can do this, and we can really do... but even though that guy... All right.
Right.
He has played a quintessential role, too, as a thought shaper for Trump.
Yeah, the benefits will outweigh the reward. So
I've never seen a vice president who is as much like a baby duckling as Mike. But every time you see Trump, Pence is right behind him. That's very unusual to me.
He has to be. I think so. I mean, honestly,
well, if I was Mike Pence, I'd be right behind him too. That way, I can know what I'm going to have to respond to later.
Right. Well, exactly. Like, you know, Rens Priebus doesn't have the kind of personality to weigh in and sort of control control President Trump. And not that anyone can, but you know, when now that Steve Bannon, who did have that kind of personality, has taken a back seat, Mike Pence is that kind of authoritative person that can stay in, you know, stay in the dialogue, be thoughtful and not too controlling, and yet still be the institutional knowledge that doesn't exist.
And see, what you also have to remember too is look where key Pence people are starting to show up. For example, Seema Verma over at the Center for Medicaid and Medicare. Those are the people who are going to be rewriting the healthcare law.
Mm-hmm.
Seema's a good friend. Dan Coats, Director of National
Intelligence.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there's your deep state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, you win on that point.
Yeah.
I mean, there's the deep intelligence there.
But that's what I mean. Those are political appointees. I think that the people that actually work at the, you know, at just below the appointed level, you know, that actually work their way up tend to be competent individuals. Within the organization.
I mean, Comey went after Martha Stewart, and she's my hero, so I'm not giving him a pass for that, to be quite honest.
I think Director Comey's an intensely competent individual.
Yeah.
Director Comey is the guy who basically documents everything.
Right.
And I was kind of shocked and surprised at the administration when they kind of freaked out when one of the Obama people, former Obama folks, I think the former number two guy at the Justice Department, was like, yeah, Director Comey was very meticulous, you know, very detailed.
He archives everything.
Yeah, note-taking. Yeah. So, yeah, no, I'm not surprised if there was a memo that, like, hey, I'm feeling...
we don't know that there was.
I'm starting to feel really uncomfortable about this conversation. I'm going to go make myself a note or two. And please note, anonymous... And we had this discussion today about anonymous sources. Anonymous sources do not mean wrong.
No. Mm-hmm.
They just mean I'm not disclosing their identity.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the reporter knows who the source is.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And usually, those sources and those reporters have relationships that have built up over time and over years.
The editors know who the sources are. The institution puts itself behind that anonymous source usually.
Right. And usually what will happen is the only people who know who the source is usually maybe the reporter and maybe like the upper tier editor. That way to always protect the person's identity, because as you know, I do this thing called the cheat sheet, which guess what,
mm-hmm.
is full of, you know, things that are fed to me by anonymous sources.
Absolutely.
But it's anonymous sources,
but you trust,
yeah, that we have a relationship with. So when people say no, these anonymous sources are automatically fake news, you know, that's just a knee-jerk reaction to stuff that you don't agree with. We'll just call it fake news and move on. Like, well, there's probably a little bit more to it. And what happens with the Trump people is their problem is they'll deny stuff at first, and then it turns out that hey, there was more to it.
Yeah.
And so, once again, if you have a problem with the people who are feeding stuff, then why do you add fuel to the fire?
Now, I leak stuff to Abdul all the time because I know that my secrets are safe with Abdul. And that's one part of this, is that if you are a reporter, those sources are important and that you're not going to get called out. I mean, it's going to stay with Abdul. If I tell him... You know, he knows a lot of other libertarian movers and shakers. He knows a lot of Republican and Democrat movers and shakers. He never runs to them and goes, guess what Spangle told me? Guess what Spangle's opinion is? You know, it just doesn't happen like that. And so it is important that a reporter, you're a little bit of a priest, right? And that you keep it to yourself.
Actually, a very good friend of mine, his name is Matthew Barnes. He's a chaplain over at the State House, kind of oversees some of the religious stuff that they do through a not-for-profit. And Matt and I kind of jokingly had a conversation one day. It's like, no, technically, you and I are both in the same business. You know, people tell us secrets. The only thing is they expect you to keep it.
Right.
That's very true.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, yeah, I think we are.
Have you ever been caught, though, in putting into the cheat sheet something that was disproven as false?
No. And that answer requires a little bit more of a more thorough explanation. When I put something in the cheat sheet, I always have a little disclaimer at the very end of it, which says, "Hey, this is gossip, rumor, innuendo. This may or may not, you know, be true. If it's true, we take full credit for it. If it's not, oh well."
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a full disclaimer right there at the very bottom. Then the cheat sheet has about a 90% accuracy rating. So, and while it may not necessarily be true at the time, it has a bad habit of like, yep, this is what we told you.
Mm-hmm.
This is what will happen.
Yeah, this is what we told you guys. It was was going to be here. So,
well, and like, so the only real difference then with like the New York Times and BuzzFeed, for instance, in this matter, is that the, if you go back to the election, you remember the 35-page dossier that was assembled on behalf of the Clinton campaign that included information off of an anonymous 4chan message board about Trump getting peed on. And they created the entire thing and intentionally, you know, did this to plant. And he included it in the dossier, which was then passed on to the New York Times and BuzzFeed as fact. And they published it. And so that is an example of they got caught purposely using fabricated evidence by an individual who passed it on, and because of his reputation from the past, it was treated as fact. But it has discredited the news organization in relation to reporting on Trump, and puts them in a situation where it's tough to say anything the New York Times from this point forward puts, if it isn't actually, from the word mouth of God.
Actually, it's really easy, because once again, do the facts bear out the reporting? Because we can always go back and look at do the facts bear out the reporting, because remember when
Trump wasn't peed on.
Well, everybody's got one man's golden shower as a
but I mean like that
as
that,
another man's that pearl was, necklace.
But I mean they but I'm saying like the, you know they you look back and they say this is where it was planned and coordinated on the message board. This is the archive of that conversation happening. This is where he directly took it from.
See, but here's the thing to keep in mind when we try to figure out, you know, discern fake news from real news. The question I always tell people: what's your track record? What's your track record for getting it right? Because after the fact, we can always go back and do a comparison. Because when the, what's his face? He came out on the White House lawn and said there was never a meeting. National Security Advisor.
General Flynn?
No. This is after Flynn. I can't remember the guy's name. I'm drawing a blank right now.
The new guy?
Yeah.
I can't either. Basically,
McMaster? Or.
It was one who came out and he phrased his words very carefully. Because he didn't necessarily say a meeting didn't occur. He was like, well, you're mischaracterizing the nature of those conversations. All right. You're not saying no. And when you start parsing your words like that, like Abdul, you know.
That's a reason to start looking.
Yeah, exactly. When you really start thin slicing the language. Perfect example. I think I told you this story back in my law school days. Mm-hmm. At a friend of mine I was dating, it was like, hey, me and the guys are going out tonight. Nobody's just a blow up. He's like, okay, but don't come back to my house smelling like a stripper. Okay. I come back. She's glitter, the cheap cologne.
All right.
Yeah, cheap perfume. Cologne, that was my other buddy. That was the place he went. They were all hanging out together, so like we're in for a penny and for a pound. And so she was like, hey, you smell like a... I told you, you promised me, you lied to me. Like, what do you mean? You said you would not come back to my house smelling like a stripper. It's like, I don't. I smell like several strippers.
Nuance.
Yes.
Could you imagine being married to him? He's argumentative, Your Honor.
Well, my dad did tell my wife, you know, before we got married, it's like, well, Abdul... He'll treat you well. He'll never lie to you, but you better narrowly tailored.
Trust but verify.
Yeah, don't give him any wiggle room because he will take advantage of it like it's nobody's business.
When you hear Abdul,
hence is the nature of law training.
When you hear Abdul say, "So what you're saying is," just walk away from the conversation. Yeah. There's no argument at that point. He's turned on the lawyer, and you're home.
Like, so I'm trying to understand. Let me repeat that back to you. I want to make sure we're talking about the same thing.
Now that is what destroyed my conservatism. My republicanism, because I would just parrot whatever Rush Limbaugh said, and then he. So really, okay, let me repeat that.
Let's
back
walk
to
through
you.
That.
Let's dig deeper into what that.
And then
means.
I was like, and then I just went, I know nothing. I should probably.
I'm the guy
out.
Who went through Mark Levin's book and said, "That's wrong. That's wrong. Yeah, that's wrong.
Liberty was it the Liberty Amendment?
Men in Black.
Men in Black.
Yeah, I was like, nope, that's wrong. And you left out that part over there and that part there.
Well, I mean, he everything he does is perfectly curated to match the narrative he's trying to
right,
to tell.
Yeah, like,
and that's why once again about anonymous sources. Nobody gets mad at the anonymous sources when they're pushing your narrative out.
Absolutely. Right. All right. So let's get back to Mike Pence. Give us a profile because, again, we have a national audience, big national audience, and I don't think a lot of people actually know who Mike Pence is. Or why they should care. So tell us who Mike Pence is.
Because he's just a couple subpoenas away from possibly being president of the United States.
And that's
which is why you might want to care.
Why we're asking this question, Abdul.
No. I mean, Mike is, you know, Hoosier, you know, from Indiana, the eastern central part of the state, the Richmond or 6th Congressional District. He used to be a former radio talk show host. Matter of fact, my office at the MS Communications Building downtown Annapolis used to be Mike's office.
Oh, really?
You can imagine the stuff. The pictures on the wall are probably just a little different.
Right.
And, you know, Mike's a radio talk show host, lawyer, former governor. I mean, his public record is all out there. Mike Pence is not a bad, horrible, evil person. Mike does not hate anybody. Mike Pence is just a person of deep religious conviction. I submit to you, something probably happened to Mike in his college days, early 20s, that can end up, okay, it's time to get on the Jesus train.
Mm-hmm.
Because one time we had a discussion. Was right around the governor got in office. And so it was getting ready to wrap up. I was like, Governor, something I've always noticed, whenever you have the conversation, you talk about, I think it was like 1977, 78, about that time, you say where you gave your life over, you know, to Christ as part of your personal story. Now, for a lot of people who aren't raised in the faith, usually there's an event, like yeah. Maybe like a sickness in the family, you know, a major accident or some serious crisis, or, you know, sometimes you just, you're engaged in some behavior that you need to just kind of pull yourself up out of the, you know, the three midgets that you went
like
to bed with.
George W. Bush and his alcoholism.
Yeah.
Right.
And so I asked him, what was it that happened at that time that you felt a need to change what you were doing? And the governor paused for just a second, and his response was, well, Abdul, all I can say is that was a much different Michael Pence.
Mm-hmm.
Which told me everything I need to know, that something was going on, something happened, was doing something probably shouldn't have been doing, and then like woke up one day like, holy crap, and then the pendulum swings all the other way.
Well,
that's even, the normal behavior, yeah. Is that, you know, you're absolute on one end and then absolute on the other.
Yeah.
Well, and they're...
And very strict and structured with that mm-hmm. absolutism.
And I think you see in the story that went around about his first congressional run and going negative in that campaign and how much he hated it and how much he changed and he never did it again. You know, and, you know, he 2012, that governor's campaign was really like some Hollywood writer had scripted the hokiest campaign they could think of, and it was just platitudes. But that part, a lot of that is that Mike Pence believes in platitudes.
And Mike Pence will always stay on script. You can ask, I've been in a news conference, I asked the governor the same question 8 different times.
Yep.
8 different ways, and he will stay on
yep.
script.
See, here's a trick that reporters pull, is that if they don't get the quote or the answer that they want, they will just ask the same question over and over and over until you get frustrated.
Chinese and, water torture.
Yes.
Yes.
Chinese dual torture.
And then we'll piggyback on each other because he just didn't answer his question, so now I'm going to piggyback and ask it.
Exactly right.
This way.
And Mike Pence, of any politician that I have seen over 15 years, is the biggest, he's a machine. You input question, output soundbite.
Because what were Mike's two last professions? What was he?
Radio talk show host and lawyer.
Yep. There you go.
Yeah. So he's, and Abdul's somehow related Barack Obama being a black lawyer from Chicago and Mike Pence being a talk show host from Indianapolis, going, well, that means I'm going to be president someday.
Ta-da! Well, it means you got me already. See, yeah. There you go.
The training, you know, it's there.
You're just getting 16 years of me instead of...
Yeah, so Mike Pence, I always questioned a lot of... I liked all the guys that worked for Mike Pence, but I looked at them and I saw more of, the first thing Mitch Daniels did was he brought in people like Mickey Maurer, who was a Democrat, to run the Commerce Division in Indiana. And Mitch said, I'm going to find the best person for the job. And it seemed like Mike Pence found the people who were the most loyal to him, and they looked a lot like him. It's not the diversity conversation, but mental diversity wasn't there.
Well, the thing was, you got to remember, Pence came, you know, Mitch Daniels came before he ran for governor. He came from the private sector,
right?
So he had a lot of people to pick and pull from.
Yeah,
you know, Mike ran a congressional office. We only got about staff of like 20 something odd,
right?
People. So most of the folks he pulled were from either the congressional staff or like folks associated with the Indiana Family
Trusted Reference
Institute. Yeah, yeah. Because one of the things that they, you know, was competency important. Yes, but they put loyalty above competency, in my opinion, and that's where they had several of their missteps and several of
their
problems. That'll
kill you every time.
Yeah. And also, Pence did not build and cultivate the relationship he needed with the legislature
right
at the time. And this is also coming after heels of 8 years of Mitch Daniels. You got the Speaker of the House and the President of the Indiana Senate both saying, we will never, ever let another Indiana governor run us over like that ever
again.
Again.
Because Mitch got what he wanted.
most of what he wanted.
Right.
There were some arguments on the golf course I'll tell you about one day.
Right.
That the language might even be a bit too much for this podcast.
I don't know. I've said a lot of things about Aunt Donna before.
That's true.
So how would you characterize Mitch? How would you characterize Mike Pence's time as governor? Not the policies, but in terms of how he ran a staff.
Mike was basically a cruise control governor.
Okay.
As Mitch Daniels had done, laid most of the groundwork, done most of the work. The Pence people, they were kind of their goal was to technically do no harm. Let's just kind of ride that wave and kind of add our
they were sort of stewards of the existing reforms.
Yeah, all you got to do is just stay in your lane. But then their philosophical tendencies kind of ran them off the rails a little bit. For example, right. Pence like, I want this major tax cut. The legislature was like, what? You're going to put a hole in our budget? Not going to happen. And the whole religious freedom Restoration Act, which, in all due fairness to the Pence people, they did not instigate it, but they also didn't put the brakes on it either. Because
absolutely.
Mitch Daniels was notorious for telling people, do not bring me X, Y, Z. Don't even think about it. You need to fix it and kill that crap. And you notice Eric Holcomb, this session, avoided a whole lot of that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Eric Holcomb was the right-hand man. He was the chief of staff for Mitch Daniels, the head of the Republican Party under Daniels. And we've talked a little bit about Eric Holcomb and Mitch and Mike Pence in the past, but I think it's good for the audience to kind of hear it from the Abdul's mouth. Now, you know, and you can go back and look at RFRA, RFRA in our feed if you want to hear a lot about how all that was handled from people who live here on under the ground. So would you say that this stewardship was, you know, I had heard in 2012 that this was all about him running for president in 2016. And lo and behold, in 2013, there were already polls in Iowa.
Gravis Marketing had a poll ahead of him just under 2%, like 1.6.
Well, he was doing polling.
Yeah, it was internal.
And he was in New Hampshire speaking in Iowa. Would you say that cruise control mentality was really that the governor of Indiana was a stepping stone for him to go to the presidency?
Many of us had believed that eventually the governor wanted to run for president, so you do all the things to win over a conservative base, you cut taxes, you defund Planned Parenthood.
You assemble your resume.
Yeah, use that basically as a resume builder. The problem was, while you're still building your resume, you still got to run and you still got to govern.
Yeah.
Two totally different things.
Yep.
Should he become president, do you think he could handle the job? With the caveat that, can anybody handle the job?
I don't think anybody. It's one of those things that you never know how somebody's going to react until you throw them in. Now, I will say this. I prefer governors as president over senators and other people because governors have actually had to manage things.
But he did a pretty poor job as a manager, in my opinion.
And those would be my concerns, that they were not necessarily, they were friends, I love them dearly, but not necessarily the best managers of the universe. Because sometimes it was a matter of what a good friend of mine once called situational awareness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like, does anybody here really think this is a good idea?
Yeah. Yeah, and that's Mitch Daniels came from the private sector, from business. He was a CEO, and he ran the state like a CEO. And Mike Pence ran the state like a congressman.
Yeah.
You know, somebody who talked a lot, and but didn't have the, amazingly, didn't have the ability to network. And he was so competent in the House, it seemed. And then he didn't have the same competency with the House and Senate here.
See, but even the House of Representatives, you know, what did Mike do? Mike gave a lot of speeches.
Right.
You know, we're going to defund Planned Parenthood. We're going to protect the unborn. You know, when our founding fathers at Valley Forge, you know, fought against the greatest empire in the world, all they had was their blankets and their faith in God and freedom and liberty to keep them warm. Okay.
Right.
So what's it going to do with, I guess, with the FSSA?
Yeah.
What's it got to do with, you know, how we're going to fix the roads and bridges and infrastructure?
Pay attention, libertarians.
Snap. Over here. Squirrel.
Right.
Stop that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You got to remember, though, too, he's appeals to two different, you know, his platitudes and his emphasis on those appeals to a world that only gives you 10 seconds of an attention span. For people like us, it's infuriating because we want to know the nuts and bolts, and we're so tired of hearing these people speak in platitudes and then provide no framework going forward for how they're actually going to achieve anything. And so
imagine hanging out with the State House Press Corps.
Exactly. And it's us on steroids. And so it's smart for him to stick to those platitudes because that's the mass market of voters. For the alpha voters like us, it's infuriating to have to sit and have our intelligence belittled by thinking we're just going to accept the Valley Forge argument.
There's a parody song that I listen to on Pandora I can't remember the name of the group, but it's about the movie King Kong.
Right.
And the one line they use is called, you know, thank God this is a podcast. And it's a Jack Black King Kong.
Okay.
It's called Get to the Goddamn Motherfucking Monkey.
Yep.
Because if you've ever seen King Kong, you know, they take forever to...
Yep. The buildup never ends. Right.
Like, just get to the fucking monkey, dude.
Now, careful with that banging.
I'm sorry about that.
This isn't $1 million studio. Mm-hmm. We're $1,000 studio. So that's a good place to kind of transition into something that the Libertarian Party is having and a lot that we're going to be talking about moving forward here. Is the Libertarian Party worth it? Because there is a lot of soul searching going on within the party nationally and locally, but especially at the national level, of whether or not, you know, 2016, in my opinion, was a missed opportunity in a lot of ways. And you look at the organizational strength of the Libertarian Party as a whole, and we're not singling out any individual party by any stretch of the imagination, because we love libertarians dearly. We are libertarians. Abdul is libertarian friendly. You've spoken at many a libertarian convention. But I would be interested to hear from an outsider's perspective, somebody who is not within the party, an honest and fair assessment of the 2016 election for the national libertarian movement.
I had the opportunity several times to interview Governor Johnson, mm-hmm. who I really, really, really liked. Matter of fact, we did a thing that ended up on C-SPAN at the Detroit Economic Club.
Right.
Which, by the way, there's nothing cooler than your friends in D.C. that morning turn on C-SPAN, they see you and Gary Johnson, they start calling, what the?
How did that happen?
Don't worry, I'm a big deal. You wouldn't need
No, where I think the libertarians made a major misstep was... Libertarians, by their very nature, and Chris, you of all people will appreciate this as a former executive director, knows they're kind of divided into two camps.
Yeah.
There's the people who want to, you know, do the politics, and then there's the what I call the philosophy club,
mm-hmm.
libertarians. And the problem was, in my opinion, the philosophy club guys were still running the show. They were the deep state.
Yeah.
The establishment.
It's 100% true. They are the establishment.
They were the philosophy guys were the deep state as opposed to the political guys.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because obviously when America is just disenfranchised by both candidates, the two most unpopular people, you know, in friggin' America. Matter of fact, I would argue the only two people in America who have lost to each other, and they did,
mm-hmm.
because Hillary won the popular vote and he won the Electoral College, is like, okay, let's really take this opportunity to really have our act and our crap together.
Right.
Which is, okay, you know, Gary, you know, on paper, New Mexico governor, two terms, Republican, balanced budgets, checks off every box. Let's make sure that he has got all the tools, resources, you know, that you need.
The plan.
Yeah. Let's put together some of our brightest libertarians across the country, put together our, you know, policy thing that we can condense it all into, like, you know, one 20-page thing that he could take with him no matter where he goes.
An agenda to lead, yeah, really.
And always stick, you know, stick to the script.
And that was Greg's main issue, and a lot of our issue with Gary Johnson, is that the campaign was very ill-prepared and that there wasn't any policy behind it, even with Bill Weld. And whenever Bill Weld spoke about a policy, the Purity Committee screamed bloody murder, and it just made Judd Weiss was recently, he was the VP candidate with McAfee, and he was recently on Lions of Liberty, and I think it was a really interesting interview for people to hear. And he said, the Libertarian Party is like a dog pound. And I would say that any local place that you go to within the Libertarian Party, it's like a dog pound.
Well, I'll go eventually turn into soap.
Yes, and a lot of the people who have been ineffective in other organizations end up in the Libertarian Party, and you get one healthy dog and you put it in the middle of all these angry mutts. They just, you know, like these angry wolves, they just nitpick and bite at the dog, and eventually the dog escapes. And that's a lot of what I think people feel in the Libertarian Party, is that, you know, you show up, it's a lot of people who are ineffective and nitpicky and mean, and then you just go, well, what am I wasting my time here for? And I don't necessarily know how the party solves that problem. I mean, I'm on my state committee, so I'm willing to try and solve the problem, but I'm struggling to find the reason.
Actually, the way you solve the problem is you got to do what Democrats did in the early 1990s, the Democratic Leadership Council. you're going to have to basically hijack your party.
Yeah.
Right.
And take it back.
Sure.
And it will require some rule. It will require you, this is going to sound really bad, really weird, it will require you to act like other political parties.
100%.
Yep.
And what Judd Weiss was complaining about on this interview is that the Gary Johnson campaign acted like a political campaign and treated unfairly all those other little campaigns who were philosophical and like, yeah, man, we just don't play politics. We're above that. And Gary Johnson's people is like, no, we're going to fly in, give people hotel rooms, put delegates up. We're going to get our delegates there to make sure we win. You know, we're going to treat this like it is an actual political party. And there are so many people in the libertarian movement who are just pissed off by that, who are pissed off by politics that they you know.
If now, you don't like politics, then why are you a political party?
Absolutely.
Martyrdom.
Right. You know,
get off the cross. Somebody else could use the wood.
It is martyrdom. It is feelings. It is that it makes them feel engaged.
It's liberty virtue signaling.
Right. Showing up to a meeting once a month with the same five people and then chasing off anybody who's new that might be effective. You know, the concept of infighting to me is not a bad concept. Sometimes we need to have a conversation that things suck and we need to change them. And you're one of the people who sucks, you know, and that is not well tolerated within the libertarian movement. I'm seen as divisive for saying that because
you're divisive for other reasons.
I'm divisive all around.
Yeah.
I've started wearing deodorant, Abdul, okay? But we as a libertarian movement, I just am struggling with how to is it worth my time? Is it worth saying to our listeners who are new libertarians, it's worth your time? Is the Libertarian Party worth it, Abdul?
I will say that overall the answer is yes. Now, the day-to-day stuff, you're going to have to make it worth it.
Right.
Which is, if you're new libertarians, you know, go get the rule book.
Right.
Learn the rules and co-opt them. Mm-hmm. As our mutual good friend Mark Rutherford says, learn the rules so you may break them well.
Yeah. So Roger Stone's like, I never did anything illegal. I never did anything immoral. I just followed the rules, and when they changed the rules, I changed strategies.
Yep. And that's kind of what you're going to have to do.
Yeah.
Because I will argue in some places, libertarians can make a difference. And like I said, the fact that, you know, so many people were looking for another candidate, you know, kind of shows that. Now, granted, there are some things you're going to have to do, which is the next time somebody decides to take their clothes off on stage, just start beating the hell out of them.
Yeah.
A lot of that stuff.
Oh, we'll leave that to Jeremiah Morrill. He's still fit to be tied over James Weeks. But
scary thing is, that was the day of the Indy 500.
Yeah.
I think there are only 12 people in Indianapolis watching the Libertarian Convention that day. I was three of them.
I will say that I will push back on that, in that there is the people who are offended by a James Weeks, and listen, it was embarrassing and inexcusable, but the reality is that everybody is looking for a reason not to join the Libertarian Party. And so
that's the burden of being an outside movement or a third party.
Absolutely.
You know, you don't have the luxury of, you know, not looking the part.
Right. But that also creates an insecurity that has led the party to being so worried about there's too much navel gazing, yet not the right navel gazing, you know, and that people don't look at the strengths and weaknesses and openly talk about it. Because everybody gets so emotional over it, because there's this massive amount of insecurity of looking bad and trying to ingratiate ourselves to Republicans and Democrats, that becomes a real problem. And that,
no, but it's like a job interview.
Sure.
Do you show up in a job interview in a suit and tie or jeans and t-shirt?
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that you can't have an honest discussion with other Libertarian Party leaders about their performance without somebody screaming infighting and carrying on that you're destroying the party. That to me is a level of immaturity that the other two parties have progressed beyond.
Yeah, okay, all right. I guess you're talking about. To me it's like you're the new kid on the block, you know, don't be insecure. I disagree with a fellow colleague of mine who writes a publication here in the state of Indiana saying libertarians should not be allowed in gubernatorial debates. I'm like, why? They're on the ballot.
Right.
They got ballot access.
Yep.
So it makes them just as viable as D's and R's.
Right. Said person also writes, when are they going to get it together? It's like, well, why don't you come actually watch us work and show up to our press conferences like Abdul does?
Yep.
So, Yeah, I just, that's the struggle, is that there's not a lot of, you know, you look at Melissa O'Donoghue. I mean, if you're a longtime listener to the show, you heard us talk about last year's convention and us standing up and saying this person should not be our gubernatorial candidate, her throwing a fit, and us saying you throwing a fit is not appropriate, and then I was the bad guy, Greg was the bad guy. It's like, this person's a crazy person. Why are you defending somebody who is literally a psychopath? Instead of the person who is the former executive director. Now, I have a chip on my shoulder over all that still.
Really?
Yeah. But it really exemplified the problem within the party, is that they're so afraid of looking bad that they will let someone who is literally a psychopath.
I will argue it's called so afraid of looking bad that you actually look bad.
Right. Yeah. Just tell her to go somewhere and sit down a party.
I think, and this is something I guess you're partially to blame for, but you know, you have been so kind to the libertarian movement here in Indiana, and you're so inclusive of them and everything. There is a sense that they are much larger than they are, that people are watching much more than they actually are. And so what happened with that whole fiasco was that people were actually paying attention whatsoever, which would, you would go back and look at the voting numbers, you'd realize they weren't watching at all. And so the fact that they don't want to look divisive or not appealing to the outsider looking in, the reality is they'd have to accept that there are no outsiders looking in. It's just them trapped inside the echo chamber.
You see, but once again, I will maintain that you guys would have done much better in the gubernatorial race had you had a different candidate. Don't get me wrong, I like Rex Bell as much as anybody else, mm-hmm. but how much campaigning did Rex actually get done? I mean, you got to do all...
We have to start acting like a real politicians. We have to start giving a vision. We have to start presenting an example of how we're going to lead and what difference that is going to look like. We are still going around explaining libertarianism to people that have lit us, and we get it. You're socially
when
concerned...
When your candidate for lieutenant governor writes on his candidate form, KTAT, there you go.
Right.
Don't think that I didn't make an issue of that. That person unfriended me because it was ridiculous. Well,
that's par for the course, though. That isn't an aberration.
But at the same time, when people do say, okay, let me see if these libertarian guys are worth my energy and time, and then I turn on the TV and there's a guy dancing naked on stage, or I look on the ballot and there's some guy with lieutenant governor kind of called KTAT, it's like, hey, guys. You get back what you put out.
Exactly.
So there's something to be said about, we look just like everybody else.
The reason that exists, though, is because there's an absolute lack of any policy agenda, any discussion on what the roadmap looks like going forward. Instead, it is an educational platform for what libertarian is, what we believe. And people already know what we believe, or know what we are, or get the gist of it.
You're a businessman. You have a product to sell. You have a very clear definition of the product that you, Abdul, are selling at indiepolitics.org. The Libertarian Party as a whole has no product to sell and is pissed off when people point that out.
You see, but I would argue you do have a product to sell.
Okay.
The product is more freedom for you and more freedom, less government. Just boil it down into very, very simple, more freedom, less government.
But
now,
isn't that too generic for most people?
Because that's your brand. Now, the thing is, we got to make sure you have the policies that explain, what exactly does more freedom, less government mean?
Right.
Well, here's what it means in education. It means vouchers for your kids. Means you got your school choice. Here's what taxes mean. It means we take only what the government needs to function, put a little bit aside for a rainy day in case of emergency, so we take as less of your money as possible.
Right.
This is what it will look like.
Yeah, here's what it means with respect to health care. I mean, that's your brand, more freedom, less government, and then, here are five or six talking points to explain what that means for
it's a contract
regular,
with your voter,
for regular people,
right?
But that requires, once again, people willing to do the work.
Now, here's the other. This
to
will warm
author an agenda that doesn't get crucified for being like the other two parties.
This will warm your little heart that's three sizes too small. It will make it grow.
I feel like Johnny Cochran.
I'm about to pull out the glove and hope it fits.
On that day in South Park, Johnny Cochran's heart grew three times larger.
Now, a huge problem with the Libertarian Party is that it is amateurs trying to play a pro game. And when you are bench warmers and then you're called up to the majors like you were in 2016, and then you perform in the way that the campaign performed, of Gary Johnson especially, that's why you guys are bench warmers. Go sit back down. Just pat them on the head and let them play their little Model UN. And so there isn't a seriousness about fundraising to hire professionals to do a pro game. And so I think when you're playing with amateurs, and anytime professionals try to come in and try to work within the party, they are pushed out because that's why we left the Republican and Democratic Party. We don't want these people in our party. It's like, well, no, you need these people who have actual skills at the game you're trying to play. And so I think that's one thing that the Libertarian Party has to grow comfortable with, is that you have to start hiring consultants.
I mean, the thing is, what people are confusing tactics with philosophy.
Right.
Correct.
Those are two totally different things. There's a reason why, you know, the football player of this team watches the footage of this football player of that team. Because I want to know how he plays, what he does, when they're going to throw the ball, when they're going to do whatever it is that they do.
Right.
Tactics are not philosophy. And that's something I think a lot of libertarians that have a problem don't quite understand.
Well, the light bulb hasn't come on for them yet.
Well, we're not like the other parties. Yeah, you're right, because they win.
Right. Yeah. How many Libertarian Party people won in 2016, Greg?
I have no idea.
Newsflash. Right.
I mean, it's a rounding error.
In politics, winning isn't everything. It's the only thing.
Exactly. Right.
If you can't win, none of this other stuff matters.
Losers don't legislate.
Nope. You have nothing to fight over if you lose.
And forever, I have tried to justify, well, there's other benefits. It's like, no. You know what? It's time to win.
And see, and here's the thing, something else to think about, too. If the, you know, as libertarians think, you know, think about rebuilding and rebranding, okay, put your party together, but then start performing your own political action committees.
Mm-hmm.
And go find Democrats and Republicans that are closer to you on XYZ.
Affect meaningful change to coalition building.
Yep.
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 Very good. So
sounds like
we're on the same page.
Yeah.
Which really frightens the shit out of me that I'm on the same page as Abdul now.
That means you've grown, young dress.
I know.
Well, I mean, there's two kinds of...
It means eventually you'll be able to get the X-Wing fighter out of the swamp.
And, you know, there's different schools of thought. Like, I separate the Libertarian movement or the Liberty movement and the Libertarian Party. Like, I think everyone should get involved with the Liberty movement, whereas the Libertarian Party, I think it will cause you to experience burnout and disengage in time because you'll get so frustrated.
Right.
The other thing, too, is that it's going to be painful for the Libertarian Party if it decides to go down this path, because the power structure that exists is the old guard that's philosophical. The old guard that's philosophical is incapable of winning. Because they refuse to touch the dirty political aspects of it. Now, if it grows, it has to decide, is it a philosophical party or is it a transactional party? Because the Republican Party has historically been more loosely affiliated around a incorrectly defined philosophy, and then they bring voters in, like Christian conservatives, tax-cutting Republicans, blah, blah, blah. Democrats are much better at coalition building and making people stay in line. I'll get this. If you support me on this, I'll support you on that. And so they form a big tent.
Right.
The Libertarian Party, I don't know what's the right answer to that question. Because if they go, like we've talked about, forming coalitions, there are people that are going to scream foul around coalescing.
I say let them scream.
It's just that the power structure that exists currently isn't formed in a way where they're going to be able to be told to go away.
Then in that case, then I would argue if your party won't get you your basic rights, go form your own political action committee.
Yeah.
True.
So you
operate outside the existing...
Go create LPAC.
That's what our good friend Mark Rutherford just started a new political action committee. So because he's tired of the bullshit as well. So that's why I started this, is that I just didn't see in both the think tank and the political party direction, I didn't see a change being affected and minds being changed effectively enough or at a broad enough scale or at a fast enough rate.
But
we started this.
See, but everybody's got to remember, you know, the think tanks play a role.
They
provide you with your policy issues. Your political party gives you the apparatus to go win elections. Then you got your government people that actually, if you get somebody elected, we can implement, you know, the think tank. And it's kind of surprising. But I take that back. It really isn't surprising that sometimes people are so focused on their little small planet, they don't see the whole big galaxy picture.
They don't see it at all. They can't see the forest from the trees.
Or the 2-foot exhaust shaft hole in the side of the Death Star.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
No, that's really true, but they don't see that it takes those three limbs in order to really affect meaningful political change and create what we're all working towards. Otherwise, what's the point?
See, that's why I believe my libertarian friends need, you know, basically, what you need is somebody to come in and take over.
You need a dictator.
You need somebody who can provide the order and the leadership that is needed. Whoops, sorry.
Keep going.
I'm just saying
this is everything that I've said for like 5 years.
Yep. This might feel. I mean, Mr. President.
He keeps doing the producers. Ah, don't know my arm.
Dr. Strange. Dr. Strange. I can walk.
I just can't. I keep waiting for Abdul's hand to start going out like this.
My mustache starts dropping off on the side.
One of the few people who can rock a mustache, Abdul Hakim Shabazz.
Little lock of hair, so I can frustrated coat hanger from Vienna.
All right, so I'm just saying that if we had a black lawyer from Chicago come in and clean things up, everything would be much better.
Get a black lawyer from Chicago and a radio talk show host from Indianapolis. What could possibly go wrong there?
So you heard it here first. Abdul is running for a presidential nomination for the Libertarian Party in 2020. So
couldn't do any worse.
No, you're 100% right. We could not. All right. Thanks so much. Please go check out Abdul's website, indiepolitics.org. At the end of the show, we like to give everybody the floor to self-promote. Are you comfortable with self-promoting, Abdul?
Well, my therapist tells me I really need to come out of my shell more.
Right. So anything, any final points or self-promotion, the floor is yours.
Just a couple of things. I always enjoy hanging out with my libertarian friends. And I do understand that sometimes you can get a little bit discouraged, but remember, you know, Republicans start out as a third party.
Yep.
Democrats are part of, you know, a two-party system that eventually end up splitting up. So there's that, number one. Number two, you have to bring ideas to the table. One of the things, like we just had a big debate here in Indiana about gas taxes. And a lot of my libertarian friends were like, no, we oppose increasing the gas tax. Like, well, what's your alternative to pay for road funding? Either they didn't have one, or whoever that guy was who wrote that insanity piece that was circulated around. Oh, used to be like the former Republican Montgomery chair.
I don't know. I didn't see it.
Yeah, he joined the Libertarian Party this last cycle, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, he's down at it's Montgomery County. He's down in Southern Indiana in District 8.
Yeah, he wrote something that was just insane.
Obscene.
It was equivalent of the naked guy getting on stage and dancing around.
It's so far outside the realm of possibility. It's funny,
right? I mean, so but if, you know, take your think tanks. You know, you got your ideas there, and if you look at where the trends are going in the country, where people are with marijuana, criminal justice reform, sentencing, you know, foreign intervention, I would argue the country's becoming more libertarian. It's just time for libertarians to catch up
and lead them there.
With the catch up with the rest of the country.
Stop being crazy.
Yeah. You know, if you need somebody to bring you order.
Listen, my life was a mess, and it was because I was crazy, because I was dating crazy girls. I stopped dating crazy girls, and all of a sudden, my life has been great for 6 months.
Crazy hot chick matrix.
Oh, it's true. It's 100% true. All right.
Try the crazy hot black chick matrix. That's a special kind of crazy.
I'll return to crazy if I can.
That's crazy with good hair.
Yeah. Oh. So, yes.
So, follow me, indiepolitics.org. I'm totally maxed out on friends on Facebook, but you can still follow me on Facebook and also Twitter, ATTY Abdul.
Yeah, and we'll put a link to your personal Facebook that you can follow publicly on the show notes and Twitter and indiepolitics, all that good stuff. So, check the description in this podcast, wherever fine podcasts are listened to. Greg?
Nope, just thanks. It's always fun having Abdul on, and I always appreciate hearing his perspective. And any listeners that are surely outraged by the level of his statism, just stomach it and deal with it, because he has good advice, and it's the advice, it's the kind of advice that is going to outrage those that were never trying to meaningfully impart change, and it is the sound we've all been waiting to hear for those who'd like to see us grow.
Abdul is...
Truth hurts! Deal with it! Work with it! You'll feel better.
Abdul is what some of you are up against. So, take that. My final thought is thank you all for being here. Thank you so much for listening. We had a nice little spring break. We did some shows ahead of time and tried to make sure to give you content while Greg and I took a couple weeks off. It was very nice. I know he's not well-rested, but... I needed a break, but I was looking forward to today. We're so glad to be back in the swing of things. We need you out there sharing, liking the Facebook page, hitting WeAreLibertarians.com, and finding other ways that you can, finding the other podcasts. Man, I'll tell you what, I want to give a shout out to Jeremiah Morrill and the Boss Hog of Liberty. That show is hilarious. Jeremiah is very mean to his castmates, and I don't like it, okay? I would never be mean to the people that spend their time coming on the show and give their opportunity, their time to We Are Libertarians. I would never treat my co-host that way, Greg.
I know. He's a tyrant.
He really is. I mean, Tanner and There's Abdul showing me a picture of Abdul holding a giant Hershey's bar. It is. It's still not as chocolate as you are.
Insert your own joke here. But the question is it plain or with almonds?
Sometimes you can be a little nutty.
Sometimes you feel like a nut.
Sometimes you don't. So I have never not felt like a nut, to be honest with you. Now, so there was an episode with Tanner called Brisket Wireless that you got to go listen to. It's very funny. Tanner Perdue is the new superstar of the We Are Libertarians universe. Loved him in 204. That episode was the first one to hit 8,000 listeners. We're now up to 8,000. We're growing by 1,000 new listeners per month since the election. So we were at 2,000 around Election Day, and now we're at 8,000 per episode, which is amazing. And we thank all of you new people for listening. We're a libertarian podcast, unlike all the other libertarian podcasts. We try to challenge your thinking and give you a group of diverse opinions, as you heard with Abdul. So thank you so much for finding out about the podcast. And check out our other shows. Just go to iTunes, search for WeAreLibertarians.com. And again, go check out The Boss Hog of Liberty with Tanner. He is something else. Your son is quite the nut, Greg.
I'll tell you what, I couldn't be more proud of my two sons, Tanner and Dakota Davis. They are just hilarious, hilarious individuals.
I was going to cancel that show because Jeremiah was very rude and called the theme music that I picked out for him silly, and he has not embraced the title Boss Hog Liberty yet, The Boss Hog of Liberty. But Tanner and Dakota were so funny on that episode, I decided to give them a reprieve. They have
you
one
should.
More week to
They're
live.
They're good kids.
So check out Tad Talks, Miranda's World, and The Chris Spangle Show, all on your favorite podcast channel. Thank you. We will see you next week. We appreciate you joining us here on We Are Libertarians, and please share with your friends. And as always, we promise
to do better next time.
Thank you for listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Get our other shows at WeAreLibertarians.com.